Into sports.
20 yards out, Urs to shoot. Don't shoot! Oh, what a goal for Fabinho! Wow!
Then get into the all-new OTB Sports app.
I think when he apologises to me, I probably will say hello to him, yeah.
No. Videos, sports news, live scores, interviews.
If Fabregas is going to come up to me in the street and give me some of the mouth that he would have given me on a football pitch, what would he do? He'd get a slap.
Plus, exclusive content on the OTB Podcast Network. The biggest names in sports, ready when you are. Search OTB Sports on your App Store and download it now.
The OTB Podcast Network.
Friday Night Racing.
On Off the Ball.
Brought to you by Horse Racing Ireland. Love every racing moment. Visit hri.ie.
And you're very welcome along to this week's edition of Friday Night Racing. It's Gerry Gilroy and Johnny Ward with you every Friday afternoon at 3 o'clock. We broadcast live and stream on the OTB Sports app and, of course, on our social channels as well. And then every Friday evening from 8 o'clock, you can hear us on Off the Ball on News Talk. Horse Racing Ireland bring you Friday Night Racing. Love every racing moment. Visit hri.ie or follow the new Twitter account at HRI Racing. I'm delighted to say our guest this week is Pat Kyo from the Curragh Racecourse. Pat, how are you?
Hey, Gerry, how are you?
I'm very well. It's been a really difficult week for the industry. What are the conversations that you've been having with your staff and with people in the industry generally? Like, what have they been like this week?
It's been very difficult for everyone that's involved in the industry. From, you know, Gordon, who's obviously directly in the line of fire on this one, but everyone else, because, you know, it's an industry that we all love. And there is absolute love and respect for the animal. You know, everywhere within it. So this just came as such a shock for everyone when it came on Sunday, and I suppose we've all been affected by it because you know we've a great responsibility in no matter what job you're doing in the industry, you've a responsibility, and people look to us as the, you know, as the custodians of the horse, and you know, people not even involved in the game who started to read this. So it's been extremely difficult because what happened was clearly a terrible mistake, an awful error, a lapse of judgment on Gordon's part, and he's taken full responsibility for that. But it's just, you know, I've never seen anything like that in racing. So it is absolutely what it is. It's just a once off. But you know, we've all been affected by it because we're all involved in the industry. So we've all had a very difficult week. You know, the people working, no matter where you're at, everyone's been affected by this. But, you know, we'll regroup and we'll recover from it because this is absolutely not typical.
Yeah.
I mean, the love of the horse is total in the sport.
I think it's about winning back the public's trust even beyond the racing industry. And I suppose that's an important aspect of your role in the Curragh. And just how difficult is that going to be? How long a process do you think that's going to be?
Well, I think, you know, that you know, whatever job you're in, you know, you're responsible for your actions in that. You're responsible for your business, whatever that might be. And you know, the stakeholders now, whatever the stakeholders would be, you know, you have a relationship with those stakeholders, and you know, you earn the confidence of those stakeholders. And things happen; we all make mistakes. And you know, if you accept that we all make mistakes, it's actually how you recover that really matters, and how you win back the confidence. And you know, we will do that as an industry. We will all do that, and there's a determination to do that. And you know, it's been a very tough week. I think the tide turned a little bit because people felt really, really sorry for Gordon put his hands up straight away, and then people started to feel, you know, there was a human element to all of this as well. A guy who had come from nowhere and, you know, moved very quickly and built up a fantastic business with his own skill and all that. And this just happened and you just have to feel really sorry. I mean, he's lost horses. He's, is Envoy Allen, is it the best horse since Arkell? I don't know. I mean, look at what he's done so far. Think of all the great trainers that have never had a really good horse. And here's the guy who's had that. So there's that. But, you know, that's only one part of it. The other part of it is how he knows that he's let himself and he's let this totally dedicated team then, and he knows that he's affected the industry. So it's been very difficult, but you know, we will recover. Recovery is well on the way.
Yeah, look, just for anybody who's hearing this after the announcement is made, we're still waiting to see exactly how the IHRB are going to deal with the suspension or whatever punishment they're going to handle down. So we'll talk about that at a later stage. Johnny, just your reflection on the week that's been, because obviously it's been a wild week for horse racing generally, for the industry.
Yeah, it seems like the year since Cheltenham last year seems like an awfully long year. But if there were a long week, certainly for racing, between last Saturday when this sort of starts to develop, and now we're at Friday, and that seems like last Saturday seems a long, long time ago. And, you know, Gordon Elliott, the irony of having a four-timer on Monday, his birthday on Tuesday, and waking up with, you know, the weight of the world on his shoulders. And I think Pat spoke really well about it there. There has been... You know, I was kind of thinking back to last year in terms of a shift of opinion. The shift of opinion last year in terms of the pandemic from when we arrived at Cheltenham to Wednesday, when there was just this horrible feeling. And this week there's been a major change, I think, a swing in opinion as well, where Gordon was really vilified, really, really vilified earlier in the week. And I think the statement that he issued on Sunday, late on Sunday night, didn't do him any favours at all. But the interview he gave with David Jennings in the Racing Post, and then I think he gave a subsequent interview with David as well, where he said, "I really hope whoever trains him, I really hope Wamba Alain wins the Gold Cup." I think people saw the human side of it. And, you know, a lot of people would have struggled not to think of the image of Wamba Alain leaving the yard in a lorry and his stable being empty. And then if you take away the horses element of it, the fact that Gordon realised that he had put his staff in real jeopardy here, depending on what would happen going forward in terms of a sanction or whatever. But more so, I think, you know, when you factor in the vilification of him on social media and what was quite frankly abuse that he and Rob James had to deal with, it takes it to a really human level, I think. And I would have been not alone in being worried for the welfare of both of them this week. And whilst what he did was terribly wrong, you know, I even spoke to Joe Malloy after we were on earlier in the week, and Joe actually texted me himself because, and I was just writing about it at the time, it was funny, and he just said, I am beginning to feel sorry for him, and he tweeted accordingly afterwards. And that human aspect of it, the anger made way for some sympathy, because at the end of the day, I think Gordon's a very honest, straight sort of a man. He knew what he did was wrong. Rob James was only a kid when that video was brought out, and he issued a very contrite and dignified statement afterwards. Racing will take a long time to recover from this, I think, but I do have sympathy for the two men. I wouldn't wish the week that they've had on anyone.
Okay, as I said, we will come back to this a little bit later on when we get a bit more detail on what the sanctions are handed down. In the meantime, Pacquiao, it's an interesting time for you guys at the Curragh. We're 2 weeks out from the start of the flat season. It feels slightly anomalous to be talking about the flat season, obviously, given that Cheltenham is literally around the corner for us, but you guys obviously need to put your preparation in place and to get ready to go.
Yeah, it's always funny that it comes so close to, you know, the middle, the national hunt season. You know, you've got Cheltenham, you've Fairy House, you've Aintree, you've Punchdown, those big festivals, and yet the fat season kicks off. So, you know, and it kicks off with a bang. You know, straight away you're into it, and you've the big races from day one, and you've classic trials, Guineas trials, starting very quickly. So, you know, it's straight in there, and there's a great air of expectation all around the place for the season. You know, they're 2-year-olds are, you know, some of them getting their first bit of work on grass now, and horses coming back. So the Curragh is a really exciting place to be now at the moment, as talking to trainers and looking forward to the season ahead. And like, it was a great year. Last year was a great year for Irish trained horses, for Curragh trained horses as well, and great expectation. And we're looking forward to a bigger and better year ahead.
I never really understood that the Curragh isn't just the actual racetrack. It's the gallops and it's the training facilities and it's all that kind of stuff as well. It was only when we started doing this job over the last couple of years that I've realised that the Enterprise is not, it's not like Croke Park where everything happens in the confines of the stadium. It's actually a much bigger operation as well. Could you just explain to people who probably don't have any real sense of what it is that your job entails and what the Curragh actually entails?
Yeah, it's actually funny that, because that would have been, don't feel alone in that, because I wouldn't have understood it till I got there, the absolute scale of it. and you always knew there were training yards on it. I knew the names of the trainers, that I knew all the trainers and the horses on it. But there's, you know, there's close to 1,000 horses trained on the Curragh. There's 55 trainers with Curragh licenses that train horses on the gallops there every day of the week. And in addition to that, horses come from all over the country to use the facilities. There you're looking at at one of the facilities there. I mean, there are numerous gallops, and the gallops go miles around. You're showing Maddenstown. You're showing Maddenstown there, which is on the far side of the Curragh camp from the Curragh. So from the race course, that's probably, you know, 1.5 or 2 kilometres away on the far side. And then go the other side from it, and you go over to the Little Curragh, which is almost the same distance the other side. So, you know, from north to south on the Curragh, there's probably, you know, there's nearly 5 kilometres apart. And then you go down, you go down the other way down, and you go down to the other gallops. So you've a major industry there, an awful lot of people employed. And, you know, from first light every morning, there are teams of horses on it. You know, the early ones, Kevin Prendergast, is on those gallops every morning at 6:30 or earlier. Could be earlier than that, and it kicks on then. And the yards would come with different, you know, a number of different groupings, different lots. So there'd be different lots coming on. A trainer might have 3, 4, or, you know, maybe 5 lots of horses, and they'd be coming on in their groups, and they would plan then from the day before what gallops they're going to use. So there's a full range of gallops on the Curragh. There's everything from grass, then you've got wood chip, which is wood chip surface, and then you've sand gallops as well. And there are numerous gallops. There are 20-something gallops all over the Curragh of all different kinds. So you showed Maddenstown there. Maddenstown is each of those gallops. So it's a sand and fibre surface. It's a grass surface, it's a wood chip surface, all side by side. And similarly, if you go over to the far side, if you go to all the way to the other end of it, you go to the Little Curragh, once again, you'll find a wood chip and a sand gallop there. So huge industry. But the gallops are so good on it. There's been a big investment in the gallops over the last number of years. The Moigler stud, Eva Maria Boucher Hefner, restored a lot of the gallops and created a beautiful new gallop in Maddenstown. The Curragh put money into it. Horse Racing Ireland funded part of it as well. And the gallops are now absolutely top class. Anyone will tell you that. So the Curragh is the best training establishment in the world, bar none. And it's a little bit untold story, but we've invested a fair bit in it over the last while because we want more horses on the Curragh. We want more owners to share that experience. So at the moment, you know, we're encouraging the trainers to do more video footage. We're doing some as well, and we're spreading the gospel. So marketing the Curragh and marketing the trainers on the Curragh as well, and thankfully that's going well. Because it is amazing. Like, it'll take us a while for people to fully appreciate how magnificent this is, but yeah. It is amazing. Johnny, you're fairly familiar with what goes on down there. You know it.
Yeah, but you see what Jerry's saying there is interesting, and I'm not wanting to go back to what we talked about at the start of the show here, but you know, there is a bit of scrutiny on the money that's invested in racing and all that, but like the Curragh itself, that area, how absolutely vital that is to the local economy, the amount of money that is spent by people who work on the Curragh. But go away from that. If racing needs to kind of go on a real PR push to show the sport in a good light, which it thoroughly deserves, it's a fantastic sport. If you did a documentary, and we've seen documentaries on various football clubs done and they've been on Netflix. If you did a documentary on the Curragh, spent a year at the Curragh and followed the characters there and showed the Curragh on a sunny summer morning. Kevin Prendergast, he's not far off 90 years of age, coming up, training his horses at 6:30 or earlier, as Pat says. Characters like Frank Oakes, who's still riding horses in his late 70s, training 1 or 2 horses. Then you have the likes of Johnny Murta and all his young team. You have all the trainers and the jockeys, the young riders starting off. You have all these beautiful horses working up there. You have all the stories that are shared. You know, horses have been running there basically for hundreds, if not thousands of years, have been running on the Curragh Plains. And, you know, there's just such a beautiful, beautiful element. And that's just going there of a random Monday morning to see the setup. And thankfully, after the money that's been spent. The racetrack has the visuals to accompany that now. But if anyone did want an idea of doing a year-long documentary, the Curragh would be a fantastic place to go. And you might not even need to show a race because so much goes on. And it's real life, real horse life, the lives of the humans up there. And it's actually a privilege. I went to see Johnny Murtagh's horses. I was around the Dublin, around the Irish Champions weekend last year. I just spent a morning up there and just came back in a better place. Now, partly that was because I met Johnny Murtagh, but it was just how vibrant the place was, and it was really beautiful. And I suppose Pat will be sad when it's all over.
Well, funny enough, just to go back to Ger's point about the economic impact of it, what it is, or you know, we will have within the next 7 days, we will launch. Jim Powers doing a piece of work for us, The Economist, at the moment, and it's about the contribution of the Curragh, the training grounds and the trainers to the local economy. So that we will launch that in the build-up to the Curragh as part of this telling, exactly as you describe it, Johnny, the story of the Curragh and the contribution that it makes.
Well, let's get into that, Pat, because like you came from Leopardstown, which was a great job because it looked like everything at Leopardstown was sorted. Everything was going great. Christmas is amazing. The Champions Weekend is great. The Dublin Racing Festival was just taken off. And then you ended up going to the Curragh, which needed somebody to come in and steer it in the right direction. Because, you know, truth be told, it was relatively controversial. There were issues when it opened. It didn't quite seem to have got the support of the locals just yet until, unfortunately, there was the amazing day when the crowds came for Pat Smullen. What was that experience like, where you go from everything is absolutely sorted in Leopardstown to what you discovered in the Curragh?
Yeah, it's interesting you should say that. The week after I was appointed to the Curragh, I went to Ascot for the King George, and I met Nick Smith there as a commercial manager of Ascot, and he had been to the Curragh, so he'd been to the Derby and the Curragh. And he said, "Jase, it's a great new facility and all that." And he said, "Yeah, you have some issues to sort out." And he said, "But that's the same." He said, "My God, the issues we had here." And he said, when they reopened Ascot, and you know, we all experienced it. He said, like you'd Royal Meeting members throwing back their badges, like with such was the issues. I said, "Well, we're looking for a bit of reassurance." So I said, "How long did it take you to get it sorted out, Nick?" He said, "For 5 years." So I was really delighted I got to the Curragh when he told me that. But then, the point is that in every venue, in any sports venue, probably easier in football, because if you go back into the Aviva after they rebuilt it, you know, if your seat is in row N7, you're still in row N7. You know, the loom mightn't be where it was before, and you know the coffee might have to go somewhere else. But by and large, the pitch is there, and you're here. These courses are very different. If the three of us went racing, there's a chance we might meet at the race course on the day, because we all do our own thing. There's things we like to see, places we like to go, and all that. So what am I saying? The difference between them is that it's only when you actually let the public into a venue, into a race course, that you'll know whether you have it right or not. And so there will always be those teething problems. Now, maybe the Curragh should have foreseen some of them. Maybe they should have foreseen some of them. But I mean, the one thing we learned very quickly when we reopened was that we hadn't tracked through the racegoer journey on the day, what they wanted to do, where they wanted to go. But it was very obvious what needed to be done. And you mentioned the fantastic champions, Longines Champions Weekend Day, when Pat's some of the great Legends race was on. And there were 11,000 people in the Curragh that day, and it functioned really well on a miserable day, And so we were beginning to get there. But since then, we've made a number of changes. The real frustration, we had to switch around where the owners and trainers were. We had to switch around where the members were to give more space to reconfigure it, you know, to give them space. And we've introduced a few things since then. So we've, at the very front, that picture you're looking at there. So if you look on the second floor there, just above the seats, originally it was reserved for members. That is now the Lily White's Lounge, public facility, best facility in racing, I would have thought. Public haven't seen that yet. And when they see it, they'll love it. inside then when we came in the main entrance, you got there was the bistro there, which was reserved for people that were dining within that. That is now Orbeez, in honour of the great Orbe, first Irish winner of the Epsom Derby, trained on the Curragh, renamed. It's a fast food outlet for everyone. Beside the children's playground, we've done that. In the Champions Hall, we've reconfigured the Champions Hall downstairs, and I think people will like what they see. So
it's living with it a little bit. Essentially, you had to live with it for a little bit to see what worked and what didn't, and that was that process that you went through, and it was a bit painful.
Yeah, you know, if you got it right beforehand, you'd be really lucky, because I know that in Leopardstown, people haven't seen the finished product in Leopardstown. They've seen most of it, but geez, they love what's been done in Leopardstown. But, you know, a couple of times, I remember there was one thing I was fixed on. You know, I was absolutely fixed on something. And the guy said, "Are you mad? Like, this isn't going to work." And I fought it for a while, and then I said, "I better listen to these guys." And I was absolutely wrong. Absolutely. So if they hadn't stood up and said to me, "You're barking here," we would have ended up with something in the wrong place in Leopardstown. So, I mean, that can happen. So what happens in the Curragh can happen in anywhere. It happened in Longchamp without a shadow of a doubt. It happened to lesser extent in Ascot, and we got some of it in the Curragh. But the Curragh, people are going to rave about the Curragh. We still have a few things to get right. We've our whistling roof, which we have a solution for. We'll have to get that done in the next number of months. We've some other issues, but people are going to love the Curragh, and the Curragh is going to be a facility for everyone, but primarily a facility for the people of Kildare. I remember going there as a kid, and the pride and all the locals. There was something different about it going there. You mean the locals, it was their home, you know. And, I firmly believe that the locals will be very, very proud of the new Curragh.
I think you have an opportunity as well, Pat. You know, you mentioned a lot of these problems were pretty unforeseen, and then you add in the fact that so much money was spent on it. A lot of people would say, you know, does the Curragh deserve all this money? When obviously you've got to argue, this is our showcase flat fixture, and our showcase flat, our iconic, racecourse really in Ireland in some respects, just because of the stuff we mentioned around it. But the Curragh in some respects might benefit from the lockdown in that it really has a fresh chance once everything gets back going again. I suppose my question is, how do you make the Curragh a fun place, a place that has atmosphere? And I think that's the problem that it has had. It's a reputation, rightly or wrongly, that it's a bit staid, that it's a bit sterile, maybe, the atmosphere at times. And how do you make it fun for people? And how do you make it seem like a real experience when you're there, whether you're indoors or outdoors at the Curragh of an average Sunday in the summer?
Well, I think, first of all, I think people create atmosphere. You can have the best facilities in the world. And if you don't have people there and you don't have people enjoying themselves, it's going to be nothing. So, I mean, that's the first thing. We need the people. We need the confidence of the people, and we need to get the people there. To do that, you need the facilities. You need the facilities as they would like them. You need the product. And you need to listen to them, to what people are saying. And I hope that we've done that. We formed a Curragh 2020 group where we pulled in the local communities. People, representatives of Newbridge, from Kildare, Kilcullen, the whole area, and we kind of said, like, what should we be doing here? And they were telling us things like the Derby weekend. The Derby weekend had lost its way to a certain extent, because the Derby weekend was 3 days. Friday night was a young person's night out. The Saturday then was the Derby and everything that went with that, and the Sunday was a family day. And somehow we moved it around, so we kind of listened. And the Derby's going to go back into an afternoon slot this year. Friday night is going to go back to, you know, what it used to be. And the Sunday is going to be a family, you know, it's going to be a family day when we encourage people to bring picnics and do all that. But the whole thing is going to be to bring the whole community. So it's not just going to be about the Curragh. This is going to be about the, you know, what the people of Kildare, what they want. And it was actually kind of sad because before lockdown last year, we did an awful lot of work done with this Curragh 2020 group. And, we had plans to, to put flags up all over, Newbridge and Kildare, with the restaurants and bars, and get everyone in behind what we were doing. So we had all the You had the plans. I know what you're saying about the lockdown has given us a chance to go again. We were ready last year. We'll absolutely be ready again whenever it comes. And, you know, the most important thing in all that is, I mean, it is a fantastic facility. It's a summer racetrack, just like it's a summer racetrack as well. So, you know, it's an outdoors, and we've got to bring more of that into play, which we will do. But the people are the ones that are going to make it live or die, you know, by whether or not we the locals like what they, you know, what they like what they see in the Curragh, and whether we make them feel welcome enough.
Can I go back to the training facilities, because I'm fascinated about what is there a magic number in your head for the amount of horses that you could safely and, you know, properly, where all the individual trainers feel like they're still getting enough attention and enough time on the tracks? What's the capacity?
Well, there used to be 1500, you know, going way back, but then, you know, people kind of left the Curragh, then, you know, built their own. There was a time when people said it'd be better to have your own gallops, and some people left the Curragh and went off and built their own facilities. What's actually, you know, what we're doing now is we're creating a facility in the Curragh. The gallops are such in the Curragh now that people travel from all over the country to be there. So you people drive, you know, horse boxes 2 hours to use the facilities on the Curragh. So I mean, it's going to be it'll, you know, I just think it's a compelling argument for people to come back to the Curragh. And I think there's two things in that. If you have your own facility and you build your own gallops, you've got to restore those gallops. We spend a couple of hundred grand a year just on restoration alone on the gallops. So it's a very, very expensive business. So, you know, to maintain those gallops where they are is expensive for people. So I think people will, you know, if people are convinced we're going to have world-class facilities, and we're going to maintain them in that condition, they will come back. And already we're seeing more business, more people travelling to the Curragh, bringing horses there. There'll be more trainers' licences on the Curragh this year, so there will be that movement towards, and I'll be quite confident that next year and the year after there'll be more of that again, Ger.
That was the other thing I wanted to ask about, was just how difficult, there are a lot of barriers to entry to become a trainer, and obviously facilities is one, horses are another, but like, if there is a facility like this where somebody who wants to become a trainer can do the work and can get access to them, then suddenly you don't have to invest in your own gallops. It's about democratizing it a little bit. It's not a silver bullet. Yep. It's not like, you know, I could walk down there tomorrow and become a trainer. But certainly if there's a kid out there who is ambitious, who's involved in the game and thinks, I want to be a trainer at some point, they can put a plan in place to get there.
Yeah, the IHRB last year introduced a rule whereby you can have split yards. There was a time when, you know, for integrity purposes, you had to, one trainer had to have a yard, so that that in terms of when there was an inspection, in terms of everything, you had to be seen, it was all one. You couldn't have two trainers sharing a yard. The IHRB listened, and you can now have a split yard. So you came along there and you were starting out with 10 horses. You could go into a yard, which Johnny could be in the other part of the yard. And once you had separate facilities for feed and tack and all that kind of stuff, and one could be seen, that can be done. So we've encouraged people to do that. So so it is possible for the small guy or girl to come along and set up in the Curragh now.
Because that's one of the things that racing, I think, is very conscious of, that it needs new blood coming through, and it needs these stories, and it needs that more accessible, more common story than I think than some of the superpowers.
Oh yeah, but I think you see that happening. You have a number of, I mean, Johnny was talking there about Johnny Murtagh. I mean, Johnny Murtagh has made the transition from jockey into successful trainer in a relatively short period of time. You've Ken Condon, you've quite a number of people that are, you know, have become quite successful, you know, building it up, and there's room for plenty more. And I think, you know, the systems are there for that to happen, and the Curragh is the perfect place for them to come to do that. The other thing is that in Ireland, as opposed to anywhere else, the prize money in racing in Ireland is so good that, you know, it's easier for someone to
it's easy for someone to get going because they, you know, prize money's there. So you're, if you bring some new owners in with you, there's a, they have a good chance of making a pay of it, of it working out. So it's a great place for people to start training horses.
How long have you got left, Pat?
In terms of what now?
At the Curragh, what's your own timeline like?
Well, I went into the Curragh originally. I mean, my plan was to finish in Leopardstown when the development was done. So that was my plan. And then there was a vacancy arose in the Curragh, and they just asked me would I go down on an interim basis. So I said I'd go down for a year. So I've been there now for 18 months. The position of
it's an Irish year, we call that.
An Irish year. The position was advertised. This morning. Funny enough, the position is advertised, and I will stay with it to ensure a smooth transition. The Curragh is in a good place at the moment. We still have stuff to do. We're in the middle of a number of really interesting initiatives, and I would like to see a smooth transition to whoever the fella or girl coming behind me. So I don't know, that there's a few months left in the chair anyway.
Well, the reason I'm asking is I've only met you a couple of times in your life, but you bring this love of the game where you're kind of just seem to be feeding off the energy of the sport and the people in the sport. And you know, I often wonder what's next for somebody who's coming to the end of a role like that, because it feels like you want to remain within racing, and that racing is kind of in you now.
Yeah, it's funny. I lived in the shadows of Leopardstown. I lived in Rathfarnham, and you know, my father and mother were both avid race fans. My dad was a racing nut, and we raced all the time. But I remember going as a very young boy, going to the racing, and you know, it was the colour, the smell, the speed, all those things that attracted me to racing. And so it's absolutely in my blood. But you know, there's an interesting bit in this, and it's taken me a while to learn this, but the you know, I actually don't think we promote that often enough in the sport. And I think that's where the Curragh is a huge advantage, in that, you know, if you compare the two race courses, the difference between Leopardstown and the Curragh, and you know, maybe 80% of people going to Leopardstown go to be entertained. They go to the Aviva, put something on there. Or they go to Croke Park, or they go to Leopardstown. They want to be entertained with sport. And 20% are there, the hardened racing nuts. You could flip that in the Curragh. 80% of the people just have this love of the horse. They could tell you, like, they could tell you who the dam was. They could tell you all that kind of stuff. And I think that that is something we don't do. There's a lot of initiatives. Look at the various programs when you roll something like that out. And you see something, you see the interest that it generates, and maybe we don't do that. Maybe we don't do that often enough. I think that's the Curragh is a great opportunity. The Curragh is a great opportunity to do that, to bring it back and to really just promote the animal for what it is. So yeah, it's in my blood. I've enjoyed this enormously. I think now at this stage, Johnny Ward last year. I remember the time the Curragh was, when it was vacant. Johnny Ward saying, of all the racing managers, he said, he made some comment, like, all the racing managers, half of them would love the job in the Curragh, and the other half would be liars. I think that's what you said, Johnny. I don't know if it was exactly, but it was something along those lines. But
it's obviously going to be so appealing to someone. This is just a kind of a, I don't know, like a pet question of mine, but in relation to the Curragh, but I've spoken to Brian Cavanagh about this before. First time I went to the Curragh, I got the train, and I missed the stop at the Curragh, but the story, I missed the first couple of races because I had to come back from Dublin, and Kevin Prendergast had a winner, and Kieran Fallon was riding for him, and I still remember a few of the horses running that day, but it was my first time there, and I was mesmerised. But is there any chance that Éireann Ó Éireann would put a stop back at the Curragh? Because the ability to be able to go to the Curragh on a day trip on the train and have a few drinks, not worry about driving. Bear in mind, you can access the Curragh from basically the Limerick line, the Cork line, the Galway line, the Dublin line, and Dublin to the Curragh is only like, what, 35 minutes or whatever. Is there any chance that could ever be revisited? Because I thought it was an absolute tragedy that they took that away, 15, 20 years ago now.
Yeah, realistically, I don't know. I mean, I think it'd be a very expensive job, and whether or not the Aaron would have the appetite, you know, financially to do it, or whether the Curragh would have the money to do it. So, I mean, that's something we looked at. But there is a shuttle bus service from the train stations into the Curragh. So, I mean, there is no excuse. There's a very good service. And funny enough, it's one of the interesting things. An awful lot of people travel, get the train from Limerick or from Cork or Tipperary to the Curragh and get the shuttle bus into the race course. It'd be nicer to have, but I mean, the shuttle bus only adds a few minutes on. It's a complimentary shuttle bus that is run by the Curragh from the train stations into the race course. So really, it'd be lovely to have that. Realistically, we're not going to see that in the short term. I think everyone would love to see it coming back. But in the meantime, there's a very good shuttle bus service. So, you know, you can... there's absolutely no reason. There's no reason for people not to come to the Curragh from any of the big cities in Ireland.
Pat, I don't know if everybody knows this, but you worked for Coolmore before Leopardstown and ultimately at the Curragh. Was the breeding side of it always something that you had been fascinated by and interested in, or was that incidental? Like, was it almost always inevitable you were going to work in racing?
No, it wasn't actually. I was working for AIB, and I ended up involved in AIB's bloodstock portfolio as I always had that interest in horse, and I've been involved in a few. I'd owned a few and I bred a few, and so they said I'd shove him into that, and that's really I got to know the guys in Coolmore through that time, and then the opportunity rose to go to work there, but. It wasn't at all. I loved my career in bank. Bank was a very different place then to what it is now. And I travelled a bit. I worked overseas with them for 10 years, so I had a great time. So no, it wasn't inevitable. But it's kind of funny, when the opportunity arose, I didn't have to think twice to take it. Little do I think the journey that I'd end up. I'd end up in Leopardstown and the Curragh. That certainly wasn't planned, but it's been great crack. It's been wild crack.
And was Leopardstown in the end a bit more like the bank in the old days, where actually it was relationships and having conversations with people and trying to listen to them to see what the issues were, as opposed to what banking is now and what the world of finance, I imagine, is generally?
Yeah. Well, I knew Leopardstown like the back of my hand. I'd raced there, and you know, there were three generations of my family racing in Leopardstown at the same time. So, like, I knew it, and I live very close by. I live very close by as well. So, I knew it well. And then I went, the minute I went into it, like I couldn't go for a pint or buy a newspaper without meeting someone, either a customer or a sponsor. I was either finding out what we were doing right or what we were doing wrong, and. That was a great experience, but you were fairly well told what you were doing wrong as well. So yeah, it was a little bit like that. It was actually like the bank in the old days. It was a community from that point of view. But you know, that's what it takes for a successful sports venue of any kind, but certainly for a race course. And I said it a number of times about the Curragh, but I mean, that's what Leopardstown had to, had to say, what are the people of South Dublin, Dublin, what do they want? You know, without losing sight that you were a race course, your prime responsibility was to put on racing, good quality racing. And how do you merge that? So you, in Leopardstown, we tried to give every day an identity. You know, that every single day had an identity. So you were appealing to a different section of your audience all the time. Like, say, Ladies' Day, the Microsoft Ladies' Day. That was one we just kind of said, might this work? We had a crack at it, and it absolutely did work. So what does your audience actually want? Where can you go and try to give every day an identity? And we've tried to do that in the Curragh as well, that for each day, and unfortunately we won't have people back for the first part of this year. But for last year, we had a laid out plan for every single day that there'd be a theme to that day. Now, it takes time for that to bed in, but we were very clear as to the direction we were going in. And some of them wouldn't work clearly, and some of them would work, and you'd build on those, and you'd shuffle it around, and you'd change it,
Yeah, that all makes a whole heap of sense. Pat, you've been great with your time. We wish you the very best of luck with whatever comes next for you, and indeed for the Curragh as well. When, last question, when do you think we might, what's your instinct about when we might see people at sports events in Ireland in any numbers?
Well, it's very hard to say, you know, and I think they will, that'll be dictated by the numbers. I don't think, you know, picking dates, I think it's kind of a bit pointless thinking about dates if you work back in numbers. I take great comfort from the rollout. You know, we Guinness has worked out about the rollout of vaccinations, and of course the rollout should be quicker here if we'd more stock and whatever. But I take a lot of comfort from the rollout in England, because if we were ahead of England, you know, it wouldn't be an awful lot of use to us in a way, because our economy is so open with England, you know, particularly, you know, with Britain to the north of Ireland. And all that, you know, we will all have to come out of this together. You know, I'm hoping that maybe I'm wrong, but maybe June we might see a little chink of light. I'd be hoping that we'd get 2,000 people in at some stage, and whether that's June or July. I know horse racing is guiding for the second 3 months. I'm an eternal optimist, and I'd like to see 2,000, and maybe for the Derby. I'd probably be over ambitious. I'd be more realistic in Dubai, but I haven't closed the door on the Dubai Duty Free Derby meeting yet, Chair.
Right. Well, I hope your optimism continues to serve you as well as it has so far. Pat, great stuff. Thanks a million.
Thank you very much, Chair. I really enjoyed that. And thanks, Johnny. Thanks, guys.
That's Pat Keogh there, the current CEO of the Curragh Racecourse. A reminder, Friday Night Racing is brought to you by Horse Racing Ireland. Let's go back to the story of the week, Johnny, because we're still, as we do this live on Friday afternoon at 3:44, waiting for some white smoke from the IHRB and what the situation is with Gordon Elliott. And as soon as it happens, we'll bring it to you on our Twitter account, @OffTheBall, on our website as well, otbsports.com. I guess, as somebody I was reading The Guardian today was making the point, that the rules aren't really fit for purpose anymore, because stuff like this just didn't happen in the olden days. The bringing the sport into disrepute wasn't a photograph going viral around the world, and the reputational damage is the thing that is essentially going to do, I think, for Gordon Elliott when it comes to a suspension. At the same time, if you were a lawyer for Elliott today, you'd be making a lot of different cases about, well, show me in the books where it says if I have a photograph taken that goes viral on WhatsApp and then on the internet, Show me in your books. Come on, give it to me in your books where you're going to prevent my client from earning a living again. It's a tough one.
Exactly. Well, look, it's, you know, I spoke to kind of some people in the IHRB, and you know, there's definitely some tension here between the BHA and the IHRB. And like, this whole episode, as much as it's utterly grotesque, it is really, really fascinating on many levels, because the BHA feels under extreme pressure about the image of the sport in Britain. And you know, it's like Cheltenham now is almost like the media focuses on Cheltenham, but, you know, the media will be focusing about Cheltenham's, you know, trying to cut down fatalities and changing the 4-miler to the 3-mile 6 race and stuff like that. And it really is petrified. So I think Cheltenham was kind of, the BHA acted quite swiftly last week and issued a statement on the Sunday. And the Turf Club, the IHRB at that stage was sort of, I think it had said that it was looking into it more or less. But the IHRB is conscious that, you know, Gordon Elliott deserves a fair hearing today. And if you, I'm totally with you on this. If you're a lawyer representing him today, you can paint a picture of how that photo happened that can certainly make it a lot more, you can forgive him, but these things can and do happen. If you put 4 or 5 lads in a situation, there'll be a bit of messing and whatever. So and that's on one level. And then on the other level, the man has had the absolute week from hell, like really, really horrific. Such that you'd be worried that it would just be too much for him, and that he'd really struggle to come out of it, because it's been horrific. He's watched his empire almost crumble in a few days. He's watched Envoy Alain leave. He's watched the horror and the tears of his staff. So there's definitely an element of that. And, you know, I don't know when this case is going to be finished, but, you know, it reminded me of the old British government's sort of secretive meetings with the Republicans, because nobody even knows where it's going on. The IHRB has been really, really insistent that, you know, there isn't an opportunity for photographs to take place there. I've spoken to journalists. There actually seems to be genuine people not actually knowing where this is going on. I've heard three or four different places where it might be going on. So they've worked hard on keeping this kind of very much behind closed doors, because it's all an image thing. It's all optics. I mean, that's the big thing. It's optics. And as you say, he's brought the game to disrepute, but I've no idea what sort of fine he'll get. But I will say one thing, he has suffered a lot already. That's unquestionable.
And look, again, we're speculating, and by the time most people listen to this, they're going to know exactly what the outcome is. But one of the things that was noticeable during the week from the BHA was their head of equine safety and something, whatever one of those long-named job titles was. He was like, we absolutely want the best runners to be able to run at Cheltenham. When we banned him, we didn't mean to ban his runners, really. We want his runners to run. We just wanted to be seen to be doing something, was the subtext. That was the first part of that. And then the other one was, he also mentioned about the possibility of an appeal. So, irrespective of what happens today, and I mean, maybe there's a bit of sequencing going on. Maybe this is why it's taking so long, that there's a hefty sentence handed down today, and everybody goes, yeah, I agree. Okay, well, we've had our pound of flesh. And then next week on appeal, or 3 weeks' time in appeal, the suspension becomes a suspended sentence, and everybody goes and moves on with their lives, because by that stage some other massive social media feeding frenzy will have taken place. Like, I don't know what a fair you'd need to see the details of the case, and you'd like to see the details of the case, and hopefully, in keeping with what happened in the Charles Byrne situation, they will publish absolutely everything. The full defence that's made by whoever is representing Gordon Elliott, and then also the reasoned decision behind whatever sentence is handed down. Because, you know, a lot of careers and the future of 80 families or whatever the number of employees are kind of on the line today.
You summed it up well there. I mean, and it is like exactly as you say, if in 3 weeks, 4 weeks' time, whatever, there's a case, you know, the Elliott thing goes to the Turf Club, this time people can go. Mightn't even make the papers, barely. It might be in the sports section. Nobody will care. It was just like people wanted to feel like people really wanted to latch onto something. And that's what it is in social media. It's kind of like, it's almost like so addictive. You need something fresh to kind of be angry about every few days. And this was certainly that. And I think he's done a lot. I think he's done an awful lot of damage, though, to the image of the sport. You know, this was carried.
Yeah. I just want to make that the other thing here that I think that it's one of those lessons that the industry can pay attention to when some of the heat comes away from it. I don't know if you're a Sopranos fan, but there's a series of episodes where they have a horse, Pyomai, and ultimately the horse gets killed. And the horse gets killed perhaps in an arson attack by Ralphie, or perhaps it gets killed in an accident when a light bulb goes off. And Tony kills Ralphie essentially because he killed a horse, even though Ralphie is one of his biggest earners. And nothing that Ralphie had done, including killing a woman with his bare hands outside the business that they run, the Bada Bing, nothing that he had done up to that point had given Tony reason to... He'd given a gun to his best friend's son, who had then gone off and become a drug dealer, and had shot Christopher, right, and killed people at a poker game he was at. Ralphie was a bad guy. They literally paint him as Satan at the end of this. Nothing he had done until he killed a horse was enough for Tony to disown him, because people love animals. That's my point, my long-winded point here is, and so the industry just needs to be very cognizant of the fact that we all make accommodations in our lives, those of us who eat meat, with farm animals and the treatment of farm animals. We kind of tend to forget about how the meat arrives on our plate. But if you are seen in any way to damage a horse or a dog, or what's the Netflix Don't F with Cats, you will feel the full weight of mankind and the Twitter mob, and nobody can stop them, because nobody can say, oh, hang on a second, what about this, what about this, what about this, because
let me just briefly bring Pat Keogh back into this. So when Fran Berry came on this show, I don't know if you remember, Ger, when that was, and I'm terrible with dates, but Fran had retired on account of what could have been a horrific injury he got in the all-weather. But to bring Pacquiao back into it, Franberry, he's walking out of what was the office in Diggs Lane, which is obviously still there, but I haven't seen it in a while, and we're doing everything remotely now. But Pacquiao wanted to come into the studio today, and I said, oh, that's, we're not doing that anymore. But when Franberry was in, we're walking out, and Fran says to me, what are you at now? And I was like, I have not much, do a bit of work later on. He said, will we go for a pint? So we went into Peter's Pub, which is like maybe half a minute from the News Talk office. Who's behind the counter? Only Pat Keogh's brother. And Pat Keogh's brother tells Fran, Jesus, Fran, fair play to you. You got me out of jail there. I had a bet on you in Cheltenham. And this was going back about 25 years ago. And I said, how did he back in Cheltenham all these years ago? But that was that. I mean, then I said to Fran, I was talking about his injury. And he said, I was in the hospital. And, you know, the nurses come up to me, and some hospital in England, the nurse come up to me and they said, what happened, Jay? And he explained all the injury, the horse had a fall on the track. And Fran could have had horrific spinal injuries, and he was in a bad way. And the gist of it was, the nurses were like, oh, yeah. But how was the horse? And it was a real eye-opener for him that, like, these people care deeply, deeply, deeply about animals. And that is what the VHA has to deal with. They know that there's a massive, massive image issue. American racing is not in a great way. Greyhound racing is practically dead in America. It's not in a great way in this country. And the Primetime documentary had an awful lot to do with that. And the greyhound industry is reeling. And we can't take for granted that the horse racing industry will be here forever if people don't support it and see that animals are looked after.
No, and rightly so. And like I wasn't making the case that Tony Soprano shouldn't have cared about the horse. He should have killed Ralphie much earlier. But that wouldn't have made for a great story arc. And
answer for himself.
It's also one of the iconic death scenes in all of television history. So I don't know. That's the situation with that at the moment, and we do wait with bated breath what happens today. But I don't think, my point is, I don't think the story's over today. I think the story's not over until they uphold whatever decision they make at an appeal, and it will be interesting to see the response from their British counterparts. So maybe the fudge is that they ban him now, and he doesn't take his horses to Cheltenham. The horses go to Cheltenham under the guise of another local trainer who comes in and takes over. And then on appeal, it's overturned or whatever, and everybody gets a little bit of their pound of flesh. Nobody's happy, and away we go.
See, the BHA, like, my feeling is the BHA doesn't want Gordon Elliott's name on the race card at Cheltenham for the optics and the fact that the press would focus heavily on this. If somebody's temporarily training the horses, I don't think it really cares. It was just one of them things. It's frightened by the optics of it, and it was just catastrophic that this image could appear as it did and get all this exposure, because it's a grossly, grossly misleading picture of an industry in which animals are looked after in many cases better than humans.
And I would say the industry needs to make sure that that's the story that comes from this, and they need to get out there and tell that story as much as they possibly can. So, look, just a reminder about where we are at the moment with the 10 to follow, my tote 10 to follow stable gains, even more pace heading to Cheltenham as CLS Emery picked up 16 points at Nace. Did I get that pronunciation right? Is it hard C or soft C?
God, I didn't know you had him as well, yeah. It's a bit of luck for you.
No, not luck, Johnny. I picked these in advance a long time ago. But anyway, so that gave me another 16 points at Nace on Sunday. And now I'm 44 points clear of you. However, I should tell everybody that 10 to follow mini game for the Cheltenham Festival is up and running. Check out tote.ie to select your stable of horses and enter them into either the free or paid game, which has prizes for the top 500 finishers. You can enter until 10 p.m. on Monday the 15th at tote.ie. So I'm on 350 and you're on 305, essentially. It's a 45-point lead for me, who obviously knows way more about horse racing than you, it turns out.
Yeah, I look like I'm up against it, but hopefully I'm pretty sure I have some of these horses that are or were trained with Gordon Elliott. Hopefully they all get there. And to be fair to the BHA, like you may question its motives, but I do think it genuinely wants the best horses to be at Cheltenham. I think, in fairness, you can't punish the horse or the owner for something the trainer did probably without thinking 2 years ago, if you know what I mean. And it's a completely mad dynamic. If they showed that hearing today on TV, I'd say it would make for gripping viewing. Like it's a hell of a story. It's just a pity it's had so many consequences already.
Okay, Friday Night Racing and Off the Ball, brought to you by Horse Racing Ireland. Love every racing moment. Visit hri.ie. We'll see you next week, Johnny. Take care.
See you, Ger.
Friday Night Racing
on Off the Ball.
Brought to you by Horse Racing Ireland. Love every racing moment. Visit hri.ie.
The OTB Podcast Network.